Welcome. We're glad to have everyone with us this morning. If you would be opening your Bibles to 1 Timothy chapter 5, we'll be continuing our study from 1 Timothy chapter 5. As has been typical each of the times I've taught the class, I go through the kind of a recap of what the setting is to help us remember where we're at. And so we have, the setting is, the audience is Timothy, the writer is Paul. He's instructing him in guiding him in his teaching and preaching practice techniques. The location of the writing is somewhere between Macedonia and Greece. The date of the letter is after Paul's first imprisonment in Rome, somewhere between AD 63 and AD 67. Tracy, can you turn me down just a little bit? Most likely before the persecutions of Nero in AD 64, because there's no real mention of persecution in the letter that Timothy himself would be experiencing and guiding him on how to deal with that. The historical setting is between the imprisonments of Paul as he revisits the churches. We don't have any information that tells us everywhere that he went. There's some secular speculation that he made it as far as Spain, but we don't have any historical evidence of that in the Bible. The purpose is for the instructions of conduct within the family of God and advice for every preacher, young and old. And we'll see that very much today in our study as we go forward with this, is we're seeing practical advice on how to deal with individuals, how to deal with situations that Timothy may experience. We talked about people, how they might look at him and despise his youth, and how he is to interact with others as a result of that. So, as we go into today's study in 1 Timothy 5, it's looking at how to deal with people. The first 16 verses look at three categories of individuals. People of different ages, people that are older widows, and people that are younger widows. And he gives specific guidance and advice on each of these categories. And from my standpoint on trying to make a lesson out of this, it's two topics almost, and it's going to be, you know, dealing with that. There's not a whole lot of information to pass on, but we're going to look specifically about our attitudes on the first category here of people of different ages. As we deal with individuals, we're all different. We're different from our race, our gender. We're different in our upbringing and our backgrounds. And we're different in our ages. We come from different generations. We come from different backgrounds associated with that. But if we look at generationally, what has been referred to as the greatest generation by some writers, those that have come through the Great Depression and World War II in their formative years and their early upbringing, have different mindsets toward things than someone that came up in the last 20 years. The Bible goes into talking here now about how we're to interact if we were to look generationally across those boundaries toward one another. It doesn't give a whole lot of guidance, but it does give us guidance that we need to be paying attention to. I find it as a manager of younger people that dealing with those types of attitudes, how they view things differently than I might view it, even from the standpoint of just looking at it in the time period that they've grown up, is a challenge. And if we at least recognize that aspect as being one thing that we have to pay attention to, it helps us put on a stronger footing as we might go in and try and teach a younger person, or we might go in and try to teach an older person as to how best to approach them. So that's the purpose for looking at this today. Timothy is being advised in verses 1 through 2. Let's just read these first two verses. Now, the term here, in verse 1 it says, "Rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father, and younger men as brethren." We're not specifically talking about an elder as in a leader within the church in this verse, because the contrast there is specifically with respect to age. It talks about an older brother or a younger brother. Verse 2, similar contrast, the elder women as mothers and the younger as sisters with all purity. Well, that covers two categories pretty much, doesn't it, that are only differentiated by what? Age. Okay? And it doesn't say a whole lot about how far that age span is. It just says recognize that there's older and there's younger. As we look at these comparisons, it says treating, I'm going to group it then as treating older people together, treating them as fathers and mothers. So if we take the first portion of verse 1 and the first portion of verse 2, we are to treat the older, those that are older than ourselves, as if we would treat our parents. Now, if we look at that theme, how are we to treat it? What does the Bible give us as guidance about how we treat our parents? Honor. What does Ephesians 6, 1 and 2 say? Obey your parents in the Lord. Specifically, for this is right. Let's go ahead and read that because I think it's important because it captures the essence of part of what he's looking for here. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. How far back did the promises with respect to honoring one's parents go? All the way. It's deeply seated in what law? It was one of the Ten Commandments, was it not? Okay, so if we go back and look at it from a law standpoint, it was specifically pointed out there. Okay? They were to honor their father and mother. Okay? It's interesting to see what the Bible has to say about looking at different, those that are aged and so on. Now, if we take that passage and we apply it now here to when treating older people as our fathers and mothers, then we are to treat them with the respect that we should be giving to our parents. So when we approach someone that is older than ourselves, we would approach them in a manner that we show with that honor. Now, we'll go into more detail as we get further along, but I want to point out some additional passages that describe now how we're to, how the Bible instructs us on dealing with people. It says up in Leviticus 19 and 32, rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old man. What custom does that lead to? What do we tell our kids to do when an older person comes into the room and we're sitting down? Get up and give them to your chair. You know, that's the same kind of... This passage in Leviticus says, rise up before the hoary head. Rise up as a sign of respect, but also in that case, rise up and give that person the honor that they are. Give them the seat that you have. Honor the face of the old man. Certain cultures, Chinese culture particularly, is very deep-seated in this, of honoring their elders. If you show disrespect to the older generation, it's very, very taboo. 1 Kings 2 and 19. Solomon exhibited this. When his mother came in to speak to him about Adonijah, he rose up and bowed to his mother and gave her a special seat on the throne. Proverbs 23 and 22. Hearken unto thy father, despise not the mother when she is old. Okay. I'm a middle-aged man, and I've been out of my parents' house for 20 years. So when do I have to stop listening to them? When they're not around anymore. When I'm dead and gray. That's the kind of honor it's talking about here. Now, if we apply that same principle to our elder Christians, when should we stop listening to them? Never. We have a responsibility to listen to those that are older and wiser than ourselves to benefit from their knowledge throughout our entire lives. Now, why would God want us to do that? He knows what older people are capable of being. He knows what they have experienced, that they've already experienced more collectively than any one individual will ever experience in their lifetime. And that if we, as younger people, will leverage that knowledge and listen to it, we can avert problems that have already been experienced by our elders. Oftentimes our parents will tell us something in advance when they see a situation approaching that they know we're probably going to act, and our natural instinct is to act in a certain way. But with the guidance that they can give us, we might be able to benefit and go a different direction, or to apply it and approach it with a slightly different technique. As we go forward, says, why would he instruct them on these things? In Job 32 and 7, a multitude of years should teach wisdom. In Psalms 92, 12 through 15, righteous shall flourish like the palm tree, and they shall bring forth fruit in old age to show that God is upright. Okay, if we take this and extend this passage, one, and particularly these two references, as Christians, we never have a time when our work is done. Elders have the older generations have a responsibility to help enlighten those of us that are younger, to keep from repeating and making mistakes. If we look at some instances in the Bible where younger generations failed, who could you cite? One that's most notable to me is the generation that came up after Joshua. What does the Bible say about the generation that came up after Joshua? They didn't know God, but specifically, why did they not know God? It refers to the statement that they served God faithfully for all the years of Joshua and the elders that saw the mighty works of the Lord. So, somewhere along there, they either just quit looking or they were just stopped being taught and listening. So, that's a good example. And you think of another individual who did not listen to what his elders had to say, and we'll move on to look at some of the biblical bad examples. What about Rehoboam? Now, Rehoboam was doomed from the start because what was already had been established about the kingdom. It was going to divide. You know, it was good. David had already been told because of the things that he had done, and Solomon had been told because of the things that he had done with respect to all the wives and his sin, that the kingdom was going to be taken from him, or a portion of it. But we have the example of how that came about. It might have been delayed had he not acted immediately the way that he did. But what was Rehoboam presented with? He was presented with an opportunity. And he went and sought counsel. What two groups did he seek counsel from? His peers, his own age, and those that had been his father's counselors. Okay? When the older and wiser men, what advice did they give him? Think about the people. Okay? They have served your father hard. He was hard on them. If you will ease up a little, they'll serve you. And then, as it relates to what young people often view as how they are individually viewed, can I come across as being weak? That was the guidance point that the younger advisor seized on. and it boiled down to how Rehoboam was going to be viewed in the eyes of the people as to whether he would be viewed as weak, how he would think he was viewed. And as a result of that, he chose, because of his own ego, to listen to the advice of his peers, make the work even harder on the people, and they immediately revolted. 10 tribes left. They went under the leadership of Jeroboam, and we see the example of not having listened to the elders. And we have a couple of instances where it's the opposite. There's an instance of an older prophet that guided a younger prophet in error. So we do have to pay attention to what we hear. But in these two examples that we've cited, it's key. Now, Malachi 2 and 15 and Proverbs 5 and 18 through 19. I want to use another illustration of bad example with respect to respecting those that are older. In this one, it's a bit of a different... it's not a matter of listening to advice that's being given or teaching that's being given. But it's the older men were despising their wives and looking to younger women. They were having the practice of putting away the wives of their youth because they'd gotten old for no other reason. Or that they were enticed by the younger and they gave up on the people that had seen them through their child-rearing years and had served with them faithfully. Proverbs 5 and 18 says, "Men are seeking younger women. Rejoice with the wife of your youth. Let her satisfy thee." Okay. Mark 7, 11 through 12. The instance cited here is the Jews were forsaking the care of their parents. They were involved in a practice called Corban. And this was actually saying that they had dedicated their funds and their resources to the temple, and they'd given it over to God, so they didn't have anything else to give to their parents. That goes directly in contradiction to the teaching that we'll see as we follow through here in 1 Timothy 5. I'm going to use a good example of Paul and Timothy's relationship. How did Paul, as an older preacher and teacher, treat Timothy? Like a son. And that fits perfectly with the example that he has here on the relationship between us. Now, for us to treat each other as those that are, of you that are older than, and I'll use myself, that are older than I am, I need to listen, don't I? I need to be receptive. I may not always want to listen, but I need to be receptive to listen. If I'm in error, I specifically need to listen and know that just like my parent would come to me, it's out of sincere concern for my soul. Vice versa, and this one's tough, is when you have to cross that boundary then as a younger person and go to an older person and deal with the situation. Craig brings up the point is there are situations where it's extremely difficult for an individual that's younger that's been in a relationship of abuse with a parent or an older relative of some sort to ever find respect for older people again. I can certainly see that. I think the comparison here, though, is looking within the confines of the brethren, that we have that, hopefully we don't have that same situation, but we would have older brothers and sisters that would exhibit the love that needs to be to help restore that type of relationship. That's a hard one to come back from. I've seen it with my extended family,
it carries scars lifetime. As it relates to us wanting to listen, I was making the point that crossing the boundary in the opposite direction is a challenge. The first time you, as a younger person, have to take your parents' keys away so they can't drive anymore, that's going to create friction within family. My dad gave them up without any heartache. He realized he couldn't. But sometimes that's not the case. And as we have an audience here of mixed ages, it's one of those things where, you know, as an older person, when your child comes to you and approaches you, be willing to listen to them out of the care for you that they truly do have. I hope that you never have to experience that. But inevitably, we are all going to age and face some of those similar situations. Similarly, if a younger person approaches an older person about a spiritual matter, I talked about a physical thing with respect to health, a spiritual matter. It's tough sometimes when you see a young whippersnapper come up to you and speak to you about something that might be wrong in your life. Well, you don't know me. I know way more than you do. Approach it from the standpoint of, from their basis of what they understand the scriptures to say, they've needed to approach me about something. Well, let me listen to it. And let's see if there's anything I need to listen to. Respect where the person is coming from. And as it relates to any relationship, try to see it through the other person's eyes is another expression. You know, they may have a different perspective on it than what you do, so at least try to understand their perspective. Whether you agree with it or not, it's another matter, but at least try to understand it to some degree. Continuing on with our examples of people of different ages, it was very difficult for me to think of the younger people and in treating each other as brothers and sisters, but the Bible's full of bad examples. Cain and Abel did not treat each other like brothers. They may have fought like brothers, may have disagreed like brothers, but there was not the love between them that should have been there as brothers. Jacob and Esau were competitive all the way up until after the return, when they joined back up after Jacob came back. Joseph and his brothers. Now, there's a lot that has to do with the fact that Joseph and his brothers had problems in how the parents dealt with the situation. But Joseph and his brothers did not have a loving relationship. Not until after Joseph ends up saving the family by bringing them down into Egypt. And that probably had a lot to do with maturity. They all got older, they all had kids of their own, and they all started experiencing some of the same things. That's true. You know, raise a child up in the way he should go and not depart from it when he gets old is a good example of sometimes they're going to make mistakes and it's going to take a while for them to come back to it. Amnon and Tamar did not treat each other with brotherly love, sisterly love. He did not respect his sister. Raped her. And Absalom turns around and kills him for it. It wasn't his role to exact that honor or that sacrifice on him, it would have been whose role? It should have been his father's. It should have been the kingdom, because anyone guilty of rape should have been killed. With the care and love of Mary and Martha for Lazarus. Did I list that under? That was a good example. If you saw the level of how distraught they were when Lazarus died, you could see the family relationship that they had with one another and care for one another. Why is this important? It's a function of respect and rapport. If we don't build rapport, it's very hard to come in and build a conversation with anybody. It's very hard to build a level of trust with anyone for them to even be willing to talk to you about something. And especially here, why? Especially with younger women, that as he's instructing Timothy, he closes out verse 2. It says, with all purity. And then it is likewise for all members as we're working with another, especially with younger women, that there be no impure thoughts. It's not necessarily how the King James is worded, but from some of the other translations conveys that idea. That as you were working together with brothers and sisters in Christ, that you not have any impure thoughts toward one another. Thoughts and comments on verse 1 and 2. I knew I'd make more out of this lesson on verses 1 and 2 than I would on the last one. About Eli's example and his sons. The rest of the chapter talks about how the church, whether or not the church was to be burdened with the support of the widows. It starts and breaks it into two categories with older widows. In verses 3 and 5 and 6, it says, honor widows that are widows indeed. Other translations would imply that they are truly destitute. They do not have any other means of support, no family, no financial income. The honor referred to here is one of taking them into the care of the church, so that the church itself, fellow Christians, are supporting them and taking care of them. This is reserved for those that are destitute, have no one to care for them. They're to be given to good works, not to pleasure. So these individuals that might be being supported by the church are not to be out living it up. They're to be involved in good works and taking care of fellow Christians as a result of that, in the event that they are in that situation. In verses 4, 8, and 16, it states that the primary care for widows falls on the family first. Okay? It says failure to do so positions the individuals worse off than infidels. Very strong language there. If we as children fail to take care of our parents, we're no better off than an immoral idolater. That's strong language. True unbeliever, an infidel, if we are not willing to take care of our own family. In the discussions here, there are guidelines given as to older widows. In verse 9, the guidelines start with 60 or older. That's the age that's listed there. Verse 9 also lists the wife of one man. I struggle with the best. I tried to do a good bit of study on this. I struggle with a final conclusion on this. If we apply it to the idea of serial monogamy, that's the easiest for me to convey as the right way to view that. But part of it is that if it's there was pointed out, as an individual that's married, remarried, married, remarried, married, remarried, there would call to question potentially, particularly if it was the case of divorce, whether that individual had the right to remarry each time on a judgment basis. Should the church be involved with that, and how the other people outside of that would view the church for supporting that individual? I'm open for further guidance and wisdom from someone much older and wiser than myself on this particular topic. There, as it says, the wife of one man. Verse 10 makes the point this individual should have a reputation for good works. Their pattern of life should be devoted to good works. It was interesting to look, but it doesn't state it, the example of Tabitha or Dorcas, how she was given to making clothes for individuals. But there it does not say how old she was, whether she was a young woman or whether she was an older woman. It just says she was given over to those types of good works, and people recognized her for that. I would use that as an example of how this older widow should act, but I can't say that Dorcas was an older woman. And as it relates to younger widows, verse 11 says, refuse to support unless there's a strong cause for show that they're truly destitute. I don't think the Bible in any way would say if you have an individual that is truly destitute that you should not, as a brother or sister, that you should not try to help them. That's why we have benevolence in order to help and assist people. But why? Truly, they should be working to support themselves. The Bible says, if anyone will not work, don't let him eat. If an individual is capable of working, what should they be doing? They should be working to support themselves. If they are supported by the church, their free time, one of the reasons why they're not to be supported is if they're supported by the church, their free time will give way to tattling and gossiping. And that's the example that's cited here in 1 Timothy. They'll be tempted to become meddlesome. So if they're not involved in the good works that they're supposed to be doing and they're not filling their idle time, they have a tendency to get engaged in activities that would be problematic for the church. It's also cited that their passions and desires are stronger. They'll likely seek to remarry, potentially departing from their first love, which would be Christ. A strong recommendation is given by Paul to Timothy. It is recommended that they marry, raise children, and care for their family. Any comments? Scott? That's correct. Makes the point that this is the only citing of a particular group of individuals that the church itself could support on an extended, ongoing, regular basis. And that is correct. The other thing that's interesting to see in this is that this particular passage is not gender neutral. As in verses 1 and 2, where it talks about older men, older women, and younger men and younger women, this passage here goes further and only cites, does not make it gender neutral. It does not include widowers in that category. It only speaks about widows. And I think the point that's being made there is that, particularly in that culture in that day, is that the men were responsible for working and were expected to work. And culturally, they would have had greater opportunity to do so. And they would have been expected to do so. There might be a situation, obviously, where that's kind of opposite in today's society. But we'd have to be careful of it. Now, name some there is one difference in today's society versus the society then. Can you think of any one thing that's happened in the last 100 years put in place within our country for the care of the elderly? Social Security. Now, how long that stays, political matters, aside, but if you were looking at capabilities for supporting people, it makes it a much more difficult case for an individual to be considered completely destitute. So there is today a social safety net of some sort. Why were these individuals not to be supported? And why was the reason given that certain ones not to be supported? Okay, well, I think I'm not wording my question correctly. In verse 16, I believe it's verse 16, it says, "And if any man or woman that believeth hath widows, let them relieve them. Let not the church be charged." The concern here was the church needed to be primarily focused on the spreading of the gospel. The secondary responsibility would have been to the care of the members. And if there were family people or there was a social, a government social network, a support program, it needs to help take care of that as opposed to the church being the primary support mechanism. Thoughts and comments? Because that wraps up what I've got as we go forward into this. The next section will start with 1 Timothy 5:17 through 25, the balance of the chapter, and then the first 10 verses of chapter 6. And Brent will have that Wednesday night. Any other comments? If not, then I've concluded for today's session. Appreciate your comments. Thank you.